Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical anti-capitalist approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 78th episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. I am happy today to share a conversation with high desert-based artist, academic, tarot reader, and deck creator, anti-racist activist, and end-of-life doula, Adrian Yenick. Adrian is someone I am very privileged to know in my high desert community, and I'm excited to share this conversation where she talks about how she uses her tarot deck, Eco Tarot, that she created to read people's climate futures, as well as sharing some of her origin stories around arriving in the desert and becoming an end-of-life doula. I've been really privileged and honored again to share space with Adrian for the last year or so in an anti-racist white caucus for white folks who are working to end or address our ingrained white supremacy, which is something that I really recommend for all white folks to do, is gather with other white folks to talk about dismantling white supremacy from within. So we do talk a little bit about that. And as I was editing this, I noticed that I said they when I referred to white people a couple of times. So I'm just going to come right out and call myself out and say I should have said we, because of course I am a white person, also unlearning ingrained white supremacy. So I am included in that. So I like to catch myself when I accidentally make that mistake. So I hope you love this conversation. Today, we're making a donation to Desert Communities United, a BIPOC centering and led mutual aid group in the high desert. And that is actually really thanks to Patreon. So thanks to patrons, I am able to either pay guests or make a donation in the name of the podcast. So thank you so much. And if you want to help sustain this podcast and get lots of extra content, because I post a lot of extra content on there as well, and we now have a Discord group too. And for $10 and up, there's a monthly tarot chat. Anyway, you can check out patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch. My class, Rising Above the Shadow, has gotten so many signups, y'all, and I got so much feedback on the last episode that was super amazing. Thank you so much for your kind words. It always is a little hard, and I have to do a little bit of compartmentalizing when I share and even to create this podcast. But knowing that it resonates with so many amazing people is just a huge honor and a huge privilege. And I don't forget for one second how much, it's just a huge honor and privilege. I don't know what else to say besides that. So thank you. And there are still spots left, Rising Above the Wound. Check it out. The link will be in show notes. We're going to be talking about Pluto. I'm really excited to be putting on my anthropologist researcher hat and compiling some data about the Pluto placements of participants. So it's going to be fun slash super intense, probably 4 weeks nerding out about Pluto and shadow work. And we're also going to do a guest meditation from Taylor Ursula of That's So Pisces, whose work I really love. I'll put a link to their website in the show notes so you can check them out. But I chose Taylor Ursula because they have this kind of like Plutonian nature, I think, and also a very Neptunian nature, obviously, because of the name. And I'm excited that we'll be collaborating in that way for the class. Also, Tarot School for Liberation is coming back next weekend, y'all, as a self-paced class. And wow, have I been busy. And Mercury retrograde has made a lot of mishaps in the recording and the editing of this episode. But I've been working all the time on Tarot School for Liberation. Thank you so much to my amazing helper and former student, Viv. You are awesome. Thank you, Viv, for being so helpful. And I also started putting together, because in Tarot School for Liberation, the question I always got is people always wanted to know more about court cards. That was sort of the part that people always had confusion around, which totally makes sense. Court cards can very easily be misinterpreted, especially in the context of us always having to create a hierarchy with them, like associating them with this idea of a kingdom, and then also the gendered nature of the court cards. So I'm putting together a bonus class. So it's a 4-module class for Tarot School for Liberation. And I'm putting together an entire new class about the court cards and the way that I work with them. And I think I'm going to have that separately for download for folks that already took Tarot School for Liberation, or for folks that just want to take the court card class. So I've got my work cut out for me in the next week. But go to the website, join the mailing list to get notification when Tarot School opens. And if you join the Patreon, you'll definitely get like the very first notification. So I'm looking forward to sharing my tarot journey and knowledge and methodology with y'all. And I'm looking forward to gathering and talking about Pluto. So hope to see y'all in class. Hope to see some of you on the Patreon. And the last announcement I wanted to make, because I don't think that I've actually announced this on the podcast, maybe I have. I want to start featuring mutual aid groups and organizers at the beginning of each podcast, just doing like a small 5 to 7 minute spot for you to talk about what you're doing, what kind of support you need, how people can get involved, why you're doing the things you're doing in your local community, because there's people that listen to this podcast from all over the country and from many other countries as well. And it would be cool for folks to connect. You know, we are in this time in late capitalism, in the times of the pandemic, in the US Pluto return, where it's really easy to feel disconnected. And I think my big goal over the last few years was to fight that inner feeling of disconnection that I have lived with my whole life. And I realized the other month, I guess it's been like a while, I realized that how much it's worked in the last few years, and that I've done a pretty good job of disconnecting myself from people that maybe are not in their most evolved self. Not really a fault to them most of the time. It's the world that we live in. And I've been able to evolve my own self past a lot of my more unevolved / toxic behaviors. And that is so rewarding. I think it's the most rewarding thing ever. So when we all are able to work on ourselves individually, I think we can better come together as a collective. And I really want to feature mutual aid groups because y'all are the lifeblood of this collapsing world. So if you're interested in participating, I'm happy to give you a small donation for your time and your energy. So go ahead and send me an email, therisenwitch@gmail.com. I'll also have that in the show notes. And let me know if you're part of a mutual aid or grassroots organizing group somewhere and you want to do a 5 to 7 minute time slot on the podcast to talk about what you're doing and how folks can support you. I think that's everything. Thank y'all so much. Looking forward to seeing some of you in class, and I hope you love this conversation. Hello, I'm here today with Adrian Yenik, artist, educator, and end-of-life doula. Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, Adrian. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Karina. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, so for those of you that are watching, we're doing this video together in the desert where we both live. And I would love if you just wanted to take a moment to introduce yourself and talk a little about your work and what you do.
Sure. So I'm an artist. I reside out here in the high desert, just outside Joshua Tree National Park. And I also am an educator. I teach at a university, Arizona State University, where I teach art and also crossover with sustainability. And then I also have been serving as an end-of-life doula. And lately, I've been trying to integrate all of those practices.
I love that. And one reason I really wanted to talk to you, besides the fact that I, you know, have loved getting to know you in the last year, we've been in a white caucus together talking about anti-racist work for white people. And you created a deck called Eco Tarot, and in the community, you read people's climate futures. So I'm super fascinated also by the fact that you're an end-of-life doula and that you've taken that step to add that to your kind of wide repertory of skills. So I'm curious if you want to talk a little bit about just sort of like how you combine like your divination practice with your views on climate change and politics and anti-racism, and then also, you know, drawing in kind of like where death dueling comes in or end-of-life dueling comes into that.
Sure. I think like the connecting point for me and also with the land is really has to do with spirit, like where spirit and heart and mind all come together. And I've been an academic for a long time. I've been an artist for a long time. I've been doing death support work for quite a long time. And I kept them fairly separate. Like almost separate. Well, oh, I do my creative work. I'm in the classroom and I'm this intellectual and then, you know, I'm serving people. And a number of years ago, really the pandemic has brought together this like urgency around understanding that I need to integrate those practices. In part, I'll be honest, like my students are very inspiring to me because it's really clear that their levels of anxiety, their levels of like ecological grief that they're carrying around, their, you know, like what they're passing through, their experience of generational trauma and historical trauma and what they're carrying with them. All of that points to the need to bring in wisdom and, you know, into the classroom. And then I also became really clear that I was sitting in some powerful rooms, but I was just bringing my head. Like I wasn't really showing myself as a spiritual being, as a, you know, the wisdom practices that I know about, as connected to the land and what I've learned from the land. That I wasn't, like, there was a separation, and I have this insight that we were really fucked if we don't bring our full selves, that if we're only, is that okay to say?
Yeah. I cuss all the time.
I'm from New Jersey originally.
Please,
so,
cuss.
Yeah, okay,
as much
all right.
As you want.
So I just got the sense, I was like, wow, if I'm only showing up as a portion of myself at the in these rooms, and everybody else is probably too, like, this is not going to go well.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're not really going to be able to make the changes that we need or work together honestly in the way we need to. So I started to just, like, you know, really pray for courage to just show up in these rooms, like, really, like, showing myself. And that was coincidental with the Eco Tarot being born. So I work in, like, a high-powered university, and I work with a lot of sustainability scientists. And just to say that I was fearful that they were going to see divination or bringing the spirit in as like anti-science, as kooky, as this.
Yeah.
What I've been really excited about is that they actually recognize that that there's a limit to them spewing out all this data, that they're generating this data, scientific data, you know, but that they understand that just that information is not really doing what we needed to do, you know, or just not doing anything about bringing people together to organize people, or to also it's having this big effect of people getting really depressed and that's causing, you know, more challenges. So they recognize that there's something else that's there that's needed, and they see that like the Eco Tarot is like one way of communication that actually could be useful in this. And so in terms of like the integration of the issue of histories of colonialism and histories of how the land has been both stewarded and then, you know, not stewarded, let's put it that way, or, you know, like extracted from and exploited. It's really imbued in the deck. So maybe I can talk a little bit about the EcoTarot deck.
Yes, please do.
So my readings are, the deck itself, is a deck that I made. It's all made on handmade paper. So this is like agave paper that I harvested, and was made into handmade paper. And then this is recycled cotton and linen. And then these are all natural pigments. So these cards are very alive. They're screen printed and then hand painted. And this deck took me 2 years to make. And essentially what it is the idea of telling people's climate future is about telling them something about their future as it relates to all the changes going on in our world. So what I'm doing in the process is really bringing people's micro, their world, themselves, all their aspirations, fears, you know, all the things that they bring. And then in the readings, really mapping that onto the larger world and what's happening so that people can both imagine this larger world and these larger changes and see themselves within that and themselves as an agent, themselves as someone who, you know, how do I navigate that? How do I... Really bringing that together, the macro and the micro, like really together in that way. And also, you know, definitely is there a way to influence or to, you know, intersect with that or, you know, so there's lots of things that come up. I've created the cards, which, if you know, I know all of you would be familiar with the tarot. So, of course, one aspect of the tarot, of levels of the tarot, of reading the minor arcana, is related to the elements. Mm-hmm. And so the wands relate to fire, and the cups relate to water, and the swords relate to air, and the pentacles, of course, relate to earth. And so in the EcoTarot cards, those are, I use the elements as the essential suits. Mm-hmm. So the fire cards, the water cards, the earth cards, here's a beautiful La Guerrera de la Tierra, the earth cards, and then the air cards, which are the both the windmills and then also the smokestack when they're reversed. Yeah,
never
uninvolved. Yeah. So, and then I took the major arcana. And I, some of them, I kept the same, the sun, the moon, star, you know, justice, the lovers, I kept some of those because they exist within our climate drama. But then some, like the empress is the gardener, and the temperance is the geneticist, and the court cards, oh, death is extinction, and the Wheel of Fortune is the life cycle. So I mapped the Chariot is the bicycle. So I mapped those on. And then with the court cards, I made them into the pages are Las Poetas. The knights are Las Guerreras, the warriors. The kings are Las Jefas. And the queens are las guías. I don't know if I can find a queen right now, but so the scouts, the guides, the kind of visionary leaders. So, and each of those court cards, when I'm doing readings, they actually map onto an ecological heroine. And so when I'm talking about La Jefa del Agua, this is Winona LaDuc. And if you know about the Stop Line 3 protest, but she's been active for a long time. Yeah. She runs Honor the Earth, a really amazing indigenous woman leader. Mm-hmm. And so I talk about Winona LaDuc. Some people might know about her. Yeah. Some people might not. La Guerrera de la Tierra is Berta Cáceres, who was a victim of ecocide. So there's an opportunity, a pedagogical opportunity within it. So the practice is both an improvisational performance, and that's how I understand it in part, but it also is a space to open up. Like, you know, the tarot is amazing at being able to shuffle our thoughts around to get us outside of our usual kind of patterns and grooves of thought. Mm-hmm. And many people, when it comes to climate change, they already have like a thought about it. They have their shtick that they say. They have, I mean, me even, as much as I'm growing and evolving, I mean, I get stuck or I get, you know, I just got into a place of like, oh, this is like really all there is, or, you know, like, so the cards do this beautiful thing where they help to make new associations and new things can open up. Mm-hmm. And one thing that's been fascinating about the practice is that, that I thought it was going to be really depressing, but it's actually been really enervating. Fascinating. I mean, that's been, the cards have taught me that is like just to give over myself. And what they want to do, you know, with people is not a, like a Pollyanna encouragement, but just to assist people in how are you navigating this. And what's happened is people leave with a different sense of agency or a different sense of like connection to like what they can do, how they can think. People share with me incredibly intimate things about what they're doing. But, you know, in relationship to colonial history, like, of course, like the Ace of Water is something, you know, is like, we are water, water is life. I mean, it's really about this like deep, like coming together of treating water in a sacred way that really comes from indigenous teachings. The earth cards, a lot of times I'm talking about land back, or I'm talking about indigenous systems. The fire cards now, the Lehefada fire is now Robin Morgan, who is an indigenous like fire, like person who's reintroducing indigenous fire tending, you know, practices here in California. There's also, just like really racial justice comes up quite a bit in different cards. So depending on the card, essentially the cards are mapped traditional tarot interpretations with climate science and other ecological values and things. And then it's always evolving. So I have some apprentices and they are evolving the practice because they layer in astrology and other things that they know into it. So I'm very much, I don't want this to stay with me. Like to my mind, the vision of it is, would be to, and I actually had the reproduction of the decks made because my idea would be to have tarot readers offer the readings as part of, you know, what they offer on like every street corner, and like use what they know, what people know about living in their bodies in the earth, what they know, and really channel those through, you know, the interpretations, layering them on. So that's the ultimate, like, you know, vision.
Wow. When did you publish this deck?
Like, so,
when
did, so the deck was, it took me 2 years to make. It was published in, I guess it took me more than 2 years to make. I started doing the readings with the original deck, on the handmade paper in November 2017, and then in March 2018 was when the reproduction was.
Amazing. And you do a lot of like we were talking about. I just want to say I love everything you just shared, and I love the historical context you put into it. And you were actually in my Tarot School for Liberation, one of my last sessions, which is amazing to have you there, and like such an honor. And I feel like, so I'm going to get a reading from you in the next couple of weeks because you're starting to do them again at the Yucca Valley Swap Meet for High Desert Test Sites. And in my mind, when I hear like climate future reading, I think like your house is going to burn down because you're going to have an access of propane and wind is going to hit. Like, that's what I hear. Like, I think of like, but maybe that's like my catastrophic anxiety. But I'm curious, like, if you can kind of give an example of how a reading would go for you, like would, you know, do like catastrophic things come up for you, or do you try to stick to like action-based items for the person that's receiving the reading?
So for sure, like one of the things about the deck and what happens is we generally have a moment like to just take some time to really contemplate like the more, like the depth of the way that that's actually hitting you, like what's going to happen. So the minor arcana, a lot of those cards are mapped onto climate science. So for instance, the three of water is relates to something called the albedo effect, which is a threshold effect of the loss of sea ice and that making things actually warmer and causing things to warm up more quickly. the fire cards definitely, you know, fire shows up, both things getting hotter and fire. The air cards are about the shift from fossil fuels to renewables. And like the four of air, for instance, is about like stagnation and, you know, not movement, you know, like status quo, you know, around that movement and stuff. So catastrophic stuff does come up. I mean, the ace of earth is species loss. And we know that we're entering and are in process in the sixth extinction, you know, now. So there's actually some people sit down and they just like start weeping, you know, like it's really deep what people are carrying with them. And, you know, we could even just take a moment now to like really, exactly. It's very, So there's a space in the readings to really acknowledge that, not just pass on from that, but really sit with that. And then what I've done is I've created a number of spreads. I have a 2-card spread, I have a 5-card spread, and I have an 8-card spread. The 8-card spread I use with people that are engaged in an ecological field, and that like goes much deeper. The 5-card spread is a direction spread. So it's, you know, north, south, west, and east, and then your center card, which is your possible climate future. And I map those onto the north is what you know about climate change, what you know about what's unfolding. The south is, you know, what you're feeling about it. The west, like the practical body space, is how it's affecting you right now in your life. And the east is a new perspective. And then the center, you know, card is this possible climate future, which is could be what's going to unfold in the larger world, could be a role for you. The 2-card spread is really simple. The first card that I look for a minor arcana card for is what's going to happen in the larger world. And the second card is your, and that's a major arcana or core card, your role or a helper card to help you navigate through that. And those can also have background cards that I can talk about more because as I'm looking for the minor arcana or the major arcana, other background cards flip up. So that's my spread for that. But there's definitely a space for, just acknowledging what we're passing through. And then, again, like, I think the beauty of the court cards becomes this, like, the pedagogy of both, like, your own role, but also, like, these incredible women that have been working at Femme Spirits, you know, women writ large that have been working in this field for a very, very long time and are doing this work. And, like, how do you also learn and look to that? Because there is a lot of hope within, or I don't know, such a weird word, but there's a place to, you know, to direct yourself, to organize with others. Like that's, you know, in the end, making community, which we don't really know how to do, like we as white people don't know how to do so well, is a big part of like one of the lessons of like, you know, this time, I think, is that we need to be in community. We need to understand how to carry conflict, carry contradiction, and be really in deep community organizing and supporting one another.
Yes. And you, I've learned, I just want to say, I've learned so much about that from you, Adrienne. I feel like being in community with you has been a really big gift in the desert. You know, we're here in the desert in this pretty conservative area. And I feel like it, since I've been here in the last few years, like community here is, can be really strong, you know? I wanted to say something about something you said when you were first speaking about what you did, about that kind of, it's not a dichotomy, but it's looked at as a dichotomy between science and magic. And when you were saying, yes, you can believe in the science behind climate change, and you can also do like divination work around it. And I love that because I think, you know, we do live in a world, like I think it's part of colonialism, part of individual, like the individualist nature kind of white supremacy to be like, it's one or the other. And I struggle with that. You know, that's also a trauma response to be like one or the other. But kind of that non-existent dichotomy, which is really a spectrum between like the science and the magic of things. Like, you know, a lot of people that aren't very educated, when I tell them I'm an herbalist or like I tell them that I work with, you know, I'm someone who used to be on a lot of pharmaceuticals for my mental health stuff. And I made the conscious choice to switch to herbs. And I have no problem with anyone that chooses to be on pharmaceuticals. I'm like, do what you need to do for you. But like some people, it always surprises me when some people are like, oh, so now you're anti-medicine. So you're anti-science now because you like plants. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, I didn't say that. Or people who are like, oh, you're an herbalist, so you're an anti-vaxxer. Mm-hmm. Or you don't believe in vaccines because you take elderberry syrup, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, no, actually, I believe in vaccines and I believe in elderberry syrup. So I think it's really interesting the way that that kind of works with, like, you can have a spiritual belief system and you can have a belief in science. Like, those two things can and do coexist.
Definitely. I mean, first of all, science arose from, like, you know, yeah. nature, from observing nature, from, you know, and the magic and mysteries of it, scientists are often the first to say, we don't know everything, mm-hmm. you know? Like, we talk about DNA, like, we know everything about it. There's, like, you know, junk DNA that's like the majority of like what that is, that they still have no idea how that's existing. And again, scientists will be the first to admit that they're not all knowing. That's the principle of science, is that it's constantly evolving, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of the most brilliant scientists, like, you know, are really people that also have meditation practices, that understand that there are other ways of knowing, you know, like, but it's just sad that it's when it becomes, you know, so politicized, or when it's under attack, then I think, you know, people circle, you know, I mean, that's a terrible phrase. I don't like circle the wagon, but, you know, that get very defensive and then lock in, right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
that's another whole thing, is how do we enable, you know, scientists are under attack, so they're feeling that way and needing to, like, create those harsh boundaries. But, you know, when they're really in their true mode of creating science, I mean, they would all admit it's all about, like, inquiring about what is the unknown, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the things that led me to the tarot, in terms of, like, you know, really wanting to, as an artist, contribute to, you know, what's happening with this larger shift, which I love Joanna Macy, the Great Transition. Like, I feel like we're in this transition.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, you know, the idea of it as a just transition is hugely important, like what's guiding that. But, like, we're in this transition, and I feel like part of my role as an artist at this moment is to help usher people through that transition. So what is that?
Yeah.
What does that look like? And I realized, when I thought about it, I was like, well, you know, in the end, one of the challenges of why people aren't making, including myself, aren't making massive, difficult, you know, changes that need to be made, and I always start with myself about, like, what am I doing, is, like, in the end, there is this idea, well, we don't really know what's going to happen, you know,
yeah.
in the future. So,
yeah.
And I was like, well, what's helped people in the past navigate that? And it's like, well, there's these divination practices. Mm-hmm. And so that's what opened up initially. I should mention that my mother is actually was a mm-hmm. professional psychic. She's now passed, and she's been a really benevolent spirit, like, with all this. And I will also mention that I mercilessly made fun of her when I was growing up. So this is, like, her revenge on me somehow, I think, that I'm doing this, because I never would have imagined that this is what I'd be doing. I've been using tarot for my whole life as a guidance, as one of many guidance systems, along with, you know, pro and con list and talking to trusted friends, and, mm-hmm. you know, but I had certainly not done, you know, full-on readings for people. Also, I recognize the power of the tarot, and I take it really seriously. I never am altered, you know, when I'm doing it. I just, you know, always, like, prepare it as a ritual before I'm doing it. I take it ethically really seriously, that people entrust me, you know, mm-hmm. with their time, and especially with, like, it feels really very deep, that because people have so many feelings and thoughts and things that they don't even maybe talk to people that are close with them about, you know, about, and it stirs up things. And also, when I do it in public, really anybody sits down. And so that's, like, a whole deep thing. Cause I do actually, I should mention, I offer my readings for free, and that's because I really feel that the, you know, that the earth, gifts of the earth, are offered to us for free, you know? So it's in acknowledgement mm-hmm. of that, but I do accept donations in order to keep the practice going. And, you know, I constantly am, like, redonating, you know, those funds and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I know that actually, It's hard. When I had my apprentices, I would pay them. So, I mean, I'm still working out, like, what is that exchange, you know, ethic around all of that? Because I definitely don't want to have people expect to always get readings for free. But it's just this type of reading I felt, like, called to offer it, you know, so that anybody can get it that wants it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Like, the whole question of, like, what to charge for readings is hard. Because I did readings for, like, 8 years before I started Rise Up Good Witch for donation only. And then when it became my job, I was like, so I can't do that anymore because bills and, you know, my, like, caring for myself. So that's an interesting thing to navigate. And I, yeah, like I said, I'm really excited to get my, like, the climate reading from you. So I would love to talk to you about, like, I heard sort of when you were speaking about sort of how your work is connected to your work as an end-of-life doula. So I want to talk to you about that, but then we also were sort of getting into, you know, being white, you know, just like the reality of being white people living in white supremacy. And I've learned a lot from you about that in the last year or so. We haven't been active in a few months, but the last while in the white caucus in the high desert, talking about kind of like local issues that are happening, working through Tim Okun's Tim Okun's white supremacy culture. So I guess, yeah, let's start with that. Let's start with kind of like, you know, any thoughts you have about like showing up as a white person in movement spaces, organizing spaces, eco, you know, ecological, work.
Sure. Thank you. And I've also learned a lot from you, Karina, as well.
Thanks.
Really, truly. And just for people that might not understand what a white caucus, you know, is, what we're doing is supporting each other. It's a group of people that are taking like our ally, our existence as ally and co-conspirators like seriously and want to show up in a way that is not reproducing white dominant culture in the movement spaces that we're in or any spaces, relational spaces that we're in. And so we're getting together to support one another through all our fumblings and mistakes and questions and feelings and, you know, so that we don't have to bring as much of that into the other spaces that we're in. I mean, acknowledging that we're, you know, we're definitely evolving and sadly bringing, you know, harm, you know, hopefully less harm wherever we are. And so that's been really deep work. I've really appreciated it. I hope that we can, you know, continue to do that work together. I was just thinking about how helpful it has been. For me, I have a couple of places. I have my classroom and my, you know, working in the university system that is definitely, you know, organized in a white supremacist, hierarchical, you know, way, and has up and down, has work to do. And I'm on a task force in my school, a Justice, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion task force. So that includes many BIPOC faculty, and I really want to show up present there. And then I'm also involved with a meditation center that's making a shift to BIPOC leadership, which has been an incredible challenge and struggle, and which is really deep because if a small meditation center, you know, has difficulty doing that, you know, like there's a practice, begin again, you know, loving kindness, there's all the tools that we supposedly have to do that work, but, you know, white supremacy and hierarchical, you know, understandings of like teacher-student relationships, it's imbued, you know, in all the structures, you know, of even, and what the space has helped me, and especially like Tema Kuhn's, we've been working slowly through that article, is really identifying the places, which is a beautiful article and has a bunch of bullet points of ways that white supremacy shows up. And also antidotes, you know, to that, which are great and that you can really put into practice. And so, so for instance, I can really see now much more clearly where my urgency shows up, where my and where that affects decision making, you know, with the group, and that's like a really big one for me, definitely. I mean, there's so many aspects of, you know, like really, you know, just even how I show up in a meeting, and I think like I'm being helpful, you know, by jumping in and leading, because I'm like a natural leader, you know, whatever. That's been reinforced in me. And just, you know, really going like, no, you know, there's other people have other ideas. There's other ways things can get done. There's a, you know, like just how to quiet myself and work on my patience and really, you know, the beauty of what emerges, you know, in that situation I've been able to see. And then that in working through that and ends up reinforcing like, oh, this is the right path, you know, to do. So, whereas like not having any other ideas about how to do that work, it was just reproducing itself. And, you know, what do you have to say about the White Caucus group work?
Oh, like, I think it's great. And the article's great. And it's like, just kind of like smirking at what you're saying. Cause I was like cringing thinking about younger me, and even like still, you know, in the last couple of years, there's been times that I've been like, oh, I'm doing it in a different way, but I'm still doing it. And I think like the thing that has been most helpful for me, and I like to make it really clear, I'm a work in progress and I do not have in any way, shape or form, like white accomplice allyship down in like, and I don't think anyone does. And if they do say that they do, like be very wary. I think like my big takeaway was just like, we as white folks have to stop seeing this. We're still looking at it in a lot of times as an individual thing. So like, you know, for me, recovering type A, perfectionist, defensive person would, if someone criticized me, I would just be like, oh my God, I'm getting criticized. I guess I'm terrible. I guess I'm a horrible person. And that's sort of like the family I was raised in kind of instilled that belief system. And I think that's collectively what I see, because I do have a lot of conversations, especially in the last couple of years. You know, I think when I was younger, but even when I started Rise Up Good Witch, I was more like, yes, I will like call someone out on social media. And in the last year, I've been like, no, I don't feel like that's the effective way of talking about this. I'd rather like call someone and be like, let's dialogue about this. Because I think like one response that I've seen in myself many times and that I see in other white folks is that it's hard for us to see this in the bigger picture of things. It feels oftentimes more like an individual failing. And, you know, while I don't want to ever say that we shouldn't take responsibility for harm that we cause, because we absolutely should, I think we have to look at it in the grander context of like, we were raised in this society. Yeah. Like we're doing the deep work of unlearning it. Just like, when, you know, when I see a cis het man being patriarchal, you know, of course that's his responsibility to change, but he's also living in a patriarchal society that has taught him to behave that way. So I think it's sort of like that, the ego, you know, is the thing that I tackle, is like, the ego is the one that's like, well, then you have to get defensive because they're attacking your character and your whole life. But no, it's not really about the individual. It's about a system that we're all responsible for, that we all take part in, whether knowingly or unknowingly. So it's not a personal failing. It's something that we're all dismantling together.
And then to be, yeah, thank you. And then to be just really thankful when someone points something out, like really grateful, because it takes courage on their end, you know, and especially if they're a person of color, maybe they're tired of doing that too.
Yeah.
And so for anyone, you know, for them to take that risk to do that, you know, it is a risk. It is courageous. It is helpful. It, you know, and to really be able to sit with that. I think the other, thank you. And that is like critically important. And I'm so indebted to my BIPOC friends that have called me out. Like, I just feel so thankful, you know, and that happened to me early on in life. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to get like a little bit more comfortable with it, to where, you know, like I can see it for what it is, of like, you know, that it's, I'm grateful. Like, and that we all absolutely, like, I feel like we're dipped in racism.
Yeah.
And so like this idea of like, you're a racist or you're not a racist. I will say like, I'm a racist, because I feel honestly that we're all racist, because we're just dipped in this white supremacy. So that's part of the work that I'm also seeing in the work that I'm trying to do with other people, is a complete recentering, right? Like, how do we, we're so centered in whiteness. And how that shows up, it's just so granular in like every conversation, the way that that shows up, the way just how, you know, even in the transition, that concern for, you know, white people's feelings in that transition, rather than like, wait, how about, you know, like, you know, the people that are really like, you know, doing this hard work and have been outside of this. So it's very deep. And it's lifelong work. That's how I'm seeing it. It's lifelong work.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and you know, there's so many great teachers now, and you know, on Instagram, on you know, that are very generous, and I try to be generous with you know, acknowledging the impact that they're having in my life, like when you know, when I have any money at all, like, you know, and also obviously just supporting you know them. I think that issue of though, I will say that I'm. Like not, I really, really, really need to work on my like right speech on like how to that whole call in the practice of how to be in dialogue with people when something's like really like getting me upset. Yeah. So I'll say that I'm very far from being able to do that in a skillful manner. And it just takes practice, right? So that's the other part of it is like the white caucus, you can practice with each other, you know, when you're saying things or, you know, like, and, you know, maybe the next step for all of us is to invite other people to be in white caucus with and our other, you know, like do, you know, like with another circle because we've like supported each other in this way. Anyway.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for saying that. I think clear, especially with some experiences, you know, I've had lately with speaking with other white people about ways that they may have caused harm. Again, it's that the defensiveness comes up that, like, I'm not the problem. President Trump is the problem. Like, the Proud Boys are the problem. I voted Democrat. I'm not the problem. You know, and that's, like, a mentality that it compartmentalizes. And I think you kind of brought that up. Like, you earlier, you were talking sort of about, like, these different identities you had and, like, the, you know, like, I don't think you used the word compartmentalization, but I sort of thought of that when you were talking about it, is just like, you know, the acceptance that there are certain things that we're just like born into that we can't necessarily control, and that, but that we benefit from and we have to work to dismantle them. So yeah, like I've loved having those conversations with you and the other amazing people on the group. And I encourage everyone, all white people that like want to work on their racism, like don't do it by yourself. I really also, I've talked about this before, I very much think that it's inappropriate when white people charge to do anti-racist coaching. I think that's really offensive when there's so many BIPOC that are offering anti-racism coaching. But I think like white folks gathering in space to talk about whiteness and how like their whiteness may be causing harm or like things they're trying to figure out about having these dialogues is really important. But it shouldn't be a thing that white people are making money off of, I want to say.
Yeah, it's, yeah, like I said, it's lifelong work for sure. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad, you know, and it's been heartening to see so many people, you know, diving into it. And I really want to encourage anyone that's out there that's doing the work to keep up with it and don't get discouraged because it's also hard. Because that's the thing is like, it's not like you get enlightened and everything gets good. It's actually, you're stepping deeper in the shit of it and the murk of it, and it can feel really difficult. So that's the other part of both having white caucus group, that you can really encourage and support each other when you, and also maybe a spiritual practice. Like I meditate, I do Vipassana meditation. It really helps me a lot to be able to also quiet my mind and create some space, you know, before I react to things. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to hear a little about your end of life doulaing, and I feel like I really want to learn about that from you because I'm thinking about, you know, at some point I would like to take a similar training. So I would love to just hear, like, you know, what inspired you, how it ties into some of the things that we've already talked about.
Sure. So I, it may be clear to you that I'm a little bit older than Karina. So I actually, my formative years in my 20s, I was in New York City during the AIDS crisis, during the AIDS pandemic, so our last pandemic. And what that meant for me as a young queer creative person was that many, many friends were getting ill and dying. the most beautiful, special people in the world that were around me were getting very, very ill, and in a way that people didn't even understand yet. And there wasn't the whole marshal of the federal global health system.
Yeah,
it was HIV, you know, like a drug user, you know, drug users who injection drug users, Haitians, and Haitian immigrants, mm-hmm. and gay, you know, men, mm-hmm. That were the first identified as part of, you know, what was called GRID. And anyway, I, along with many other people, along with being activists, as people were dying and also getting shunned by their families in many cases, you know, we, the chosen family, you know, occurred, and we all rose to the occasion and did what we needed to do to support each other and our friends. And that meant everything, you know, from being vigil, supporting people that were being in vigil, being present for all kinds, you know, being present in the hospital, in all kinds of situations, you know, helping people deal with their affairs that were too young to be even thinking about that, like all of those things. And so I noticed that as I was doing that work, again, alongside the activist work, alongside, you know, shooting activists, because I was a media producer at the time, that I was very present in a way that some people were not able to be present. Like some people couldn't handle the smells, or they just couldn't, they were just too broken down in grief, or they just, sadly, when someone was sick, they didn't know how to deal with it. You know, like everybody has a different reaction to death, yeah. and illness, and because of their own experience and trauma and other things. But I noticed that I was actually able to be really present. And, mm-hmm. and as a result, I was present with the number of people as they passed and felt like I was able to really be of assistance, including to help bridge and heal some family ties that had broke, you know, like different, a whole bunch of things that happened. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as I got older, I had friends and family who became ill and terminally ill and then passed. And I had what I came to understand as an honor to be able to be by their sides. And because of that early experience, and especially with my dear brother, Fred Drake, who was someone who brought me out to the desert, who passed from AIDS but lived for a very long time, and in part being in the desert, was able to live for a long time with AIDS. And when he passed, he had hospice support, and a group of us came together to support him being able to be at his home in hospice. He had his kitten on his shoulder, his music was playing, he was smoking a spliff, you know, his music that he had created. It was a good death. He put his cowboy hat on and took his oxygen mask off and like died, you know, like as, you know, as much on his own terms as it possibly could have been. And this is someone who was in extreme pain, and, you know, like, so I understood a couple things. One is that there is such a thing as a good death, as a death with dignity, as a death that's on your, not completely on your terms, of course, but like where you have some agency within that. Mm-hmm. And then I also had the experience of seeing how death could tear families and communities apart, or could actually bring families and communities closer together. And that felt to me like a really deep piece. And so I didn't know that there was such a thing as a death doula or an end of life doula. But the first time I heard the word, I was like, oh, I think that's what I have the capacity to do. I think I have that capacity. It like struck me immediately. And so I put it on the back burner because I have all these other things going on. I'm an artist and professor and stuff. But then I kept getting this nudge, like at times. And this is how I know. I mean, I got this nudge with the Eco Tarot too. I have a connection to spirit where I can listen. And there's a certain kind of nudge where I'm like, okay, I'll do it, you know.
Yeah.
So like I ended up realizing that like with the certification, that of course you can do this work, and people have been doing this work for millennia. Women have been doing this work for millennia without any certification and doing a fantastic job. Mm-hmm. So you do not need certification to do this. And I worry about the way that certification is is professionalizing something that, again, that people that do it best, that have been doing it in their communities for generations, women that and women of color that have been doing this, mm-hmm. are going to get shifted to the side. So that is something to really bring up. But what I did recognize was that I was like, it's a little weird to offer this service to people that aren't my friends and family if I don't have a certain, like, I've ended up feeling like with a certification, I can,
yeah,
I can feel more comfortable about offering it generally in my community. It felt a little like just morbid or weird, or there was something mm-hmm. difficult for me about it that I don't feel as much. And then the certification, of course, ended up because I did it with the Conscious Dying Institute, which was, it was really very serious. And it's actually a program that nurses that get 60 continuing ed credit hours for, like, there was tons of reading and then group meetings and all kinds of work that took me into all kinds of things. So I'm super glad that I did it. And one of the most important things is I also exist within a cohort now of other end of life doulas who are unbelievable people. And we are engaged with each other, supporting each other in this work, you know, as well. So that's like a really, that's great. To me, that is like a big part of going through a program as well, is that you can have a cohort of people that also are, you know, supporting each other.
Wow. That's amazing. And I didn't know that you were doing that type of work during the AIDS epidemic in the 80s. And that is, you know, it's a, that's a whole another question, because like that was my last, you know, my last line of work was harm reduction, HIV testing, and that's the only, like, I mean, you know, hopefully I won't be in a situation where I'm like I have to take any job I can get. But if I couldn't do this anymore as my job, I would try to get back into harm reduction, HIV prevention work. And it's interesting the way, you know, I was actually thinking about that last night, the way that like AIDS is still the top, at least like I studied global health. I like have part of a master's degree in global health in Barcelona. I went and like we were talking then about, and this was like 6 years ago, so it kind of changed. But the three diseases that are causing the largest burden of health and illness and death on the world were tuberculosis, malaria, and AIDS. And a lot of people, when I told them that, were like, no, AIDS is over. Like nobody's like has AIDS like that. And I'm like, no, like it's still a thing. Like it's still a disease that is like not curable. It's very, very treatable, but who has access to treatment, especially outside of California? You know, California is a great program for people that are HIV positive. But it is still a huge burden of illness.
And our brothers and sisters of color in the South are like very deeply affected by it still. And you can see those access issues and, you know, the health justice issues woven, you know, mm-hmm. through, not to mention globally, for sure.
Absolutely. So this has been this has been a great conversation. I'm wondering if you can give a little info if folks want to, and I like, I'm like, we set up the video, so like our eyes are cut off in the video. Whoops, right. My bad. Do you want to share info for like if people want to get in touch with you, if they want to get like an Eco Tarot reading from you or learn more?
Sure, yeah. So the easiest way to get in touch is just if you're on Instagram, it's just at Eco Tarot. It's one word. And so if you follow me there, you can feel free to direct message me. What I do is I'll offer like blocks of free readings online. And then also like, if you want to be on my mailing list, then I can put you on my mailing list. And if I'm in your city or, you know, something else, I can do like a local mailing of when I'm offering readings. And then also the decks are for sale. And there's a connection from my Linktree on my Instagram as well. And then if you're not in Instagram, it's just my name, Adrienne, Adrienne.Yennick, Jennik, @gmail.com. And you can write me to order decks or whatever.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to have this conversation with me. It's an honor to know you and collaborate.
Thank you, Karina. Same way. I feel the same way. And also, it felt like it opened up some channels of further conversation.
Yes, so, definitely.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for
for listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you want to support the show, go to patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch, where a pledge of $5 or more per month gets you access to extra content and helps support the production of the show. And go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and a review. You can also check out the website for tarot readings and apothecary and other offerings. Thanks so much, y'all. See you next time.